The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesar Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesar Rewards. Must be 21 or older.
Welcome to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast. One of the hosts says if you give him a 3-yard cushion, he'll rip it apart with his teeth. That's Lenny. I'm Mina Kimes. The draft is in the books, and I am so excited to talk about it with my friend. This is his first time actually on, you came on the podcast and you did in the second half, but you haven't come on the first episode of the week. Brett Coleman of the Bootleg Football Show. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me. Wild draft. And honestly, I'm still not over day one. I'm still trying to process everything that happened.
By everything, you mean Michael Penix.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we were very chalk and then very not chalk and then very chalk again.
It got super weird super quickly. We're going to talk about that in the second half of this pod. We're going to do the same thing I did last year, which is we're going to pick some winners from the draft, and then we're going to talk about things that made us go, because I don't like to call them losers. And I think the hums are interesting because my hums is your winner, and I see why it's a winner, but it's also a hum. So anyways, we'll get to that. No spoilers for the second part of this podcast. I asked you for some winners. I sent you some winners. Neither of us picked the Bears, but I do want to talk about the Bears at the top. I feel like because it was so such a foregone conclusion the Bears would take Caleb Williams, they almost got kind of quietly slept on a little bit in the draft. Like we at NFL Live didn't actually talk about Caleb Williams as much as we talked about the other quarterbacks, quite frankly. But I do think it's worth nodding to them because it wasn't a foregone conclusion that they would get Roma Dunze at 9. It was a possibility, a strong possibility. I think ESPN Analytics draft predictor had it as the most likely outcome for Rome. Obviously, it did not anticipate Penix going 8, which kind of shook things up, or no one trading up for J.J. McCarthy, which we'll get to. But I'm going to pose a question to you. Are you ready?
Sure.
The Bears' 3 wide receivers, DJ Moore, Roma Dunze, Keenan Allen, amongst triplets, so you could do wide receiver, tight end, to triplets, where does that rank in the NFL? Like, how many triplets across the league would you say are better than that trio?
It can't be more than 3. Crazy. Right? It can't be more than 3. Because I kind of default to Cincinnati with Jamar and T, and they just added Jermaine Burton, who at least in terms of on-field grade was a top 10 receiver in this class. Houston, we got Stephon Diggs, Nico Collins, Tank Dell. Boy, they might be top 3, honestly.
The Niners. If we're doing Niners,
that's true. Niners. Well, depending.
We'll see what happens. We're going to talk about the Niners. Yeah. I would say in the same division, the Vikings, Jefferson, Addison, and Hockenson. Although that's giving a lot of credit to Addison, but I think Justin Jefferson is so good. It's kind of like the Bengals where I think the Seahawks trio of wide receivers is up there. Metcalf, Lockett, JSN. Mm-hmm. The Eagles, if we're doing triplets, AJ Brown, Smith, Goddard. Dolphins, it's Hill and Waddle, but that's not a triplet. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely top 5. Which is outrageous for a rookie quarterback to walk into. And another one's walking into the other situation. We're going to talk about that. But just to focus on Caleb, for example, I don't think any of us were being hyperbolic right there on draft night when we were, we have a tendency, sometimes me and my colleagues, we'll be a little hyperbolic about this is the best situation ever. But Brett, it kind of is.
I mean, as far as rookie quarterback situations go, the last one that I can remember that I think was this good out of the box was Dak in 2016.
Yeah.
Because the offensive line, you had still Dez was there in the later stages of his prime, but he was there. You had a really good young running back in Zeke, who was the most productive running back in the league for the first couple of years. We're talking almost 10 years ago. Was the last time there was a situation, I know, makes us feel old, but was the last time there was a situation that was like this. And I don't know about you, but I think Caleb was a better prospect than Dak when he was coming out of Mississippi State. Yeah. So we saw a historically good rookie season with Justin Herbert a few years ago and a historically good rookie season with CJ Stroud last year. We could see another one with Caleb because as far as situations go, this is a rare, rare situation. Plus, on top of that, just because I want to bug my podcast co-host, EJ Snyder, who's a Bears fan, they got the Caleb Williams of punters, too. So field position is going to be great for them this year.
It took him the fourth round, I think.
Fourth round.
Ultimate heat check, Brian Poles. Ultimate heat check. I absolutely loved Caleb texting him immediately and saying, yeah, we're not going to punt a lot this year. Bro. Like, I'll stop making that gesture for the YouTube audience with my hands of mind blown. But I love that. I love that level of swagger in a quarterback. Just personal taste. I'm sure some people, fans of opposing teams might not love it. But yeah, I think it's a level of swagger that's merited because of what he's walking into. And getting Rome Odunze, I mean, just real quick. It's funny because we were talking about the triplets and you mentioned Higgins and Chase. In some ways, Brett, the combination of Moore and Odunze almost kind of map onto Chase mm-hmm. and Higgins a little bit. Like, they're not quite, there's differences in the players, but they're the team where everyone's going to say, oh, they really have two number ones right now. They have guys yep. who can win at all three levels, guys who can fight for the ball, guys who have speed, who can get yards after the catch. And then, oh, by the way, they also have Keenan Allen. Like, it's stupid. If I was a Bears fans right now, given their history with an offense generally, I wouldn't know what to do with my hands.
How are they not the lock for Hard Knocks?
Yeah.
Like, they have to be, right? Also, by the way, just to get you excited about this, rookie year, this year, we're getting Caleb Williams against CJ Stroud. So,
oh my God, that rules.
Buckle up.
Okay, so that neither of us had that as a winner. I'm going to go first with one of my winners, and we can go back and forth. I had the Colts, and this mm-hmm. is really for what they did in the first part of the draft. They took the first defensive player off the board, Lautu. I didn't think that they would go edge necessarily, although quietly, or not, maybe not quietly, but that was definitely a need. I had kind of resigned myself to the fact they were going to go either offense or take a quarter. But I went on your show, talked about my love for Lautu. I've talked about it on my show. I think he's the most polished pass rusher in the draft, a guy who can start day one, a guy who I love the fact that he gets to play next to DeForest Buckner. They already have a lot of talent on that defensive line. I thought of him more as like a 3-4, Colts are a 4-3, but I think given how strong they are already, it's a really good place where he'll get a lot of one-on-ones and opportunities to go get the quarterback. But that said, I was like, I really wish they had gotten a weapon for Anthony Richardson. Brock Bowers was gone at that point. Brian Thomas Jr. was still on the board. And then pick 20, in the second round, which blew my mind, A.D. Mitchell. That was one of the more surprising falls of me. I guess it shouldn't have been surprising. I talked about his boom and bust potential, and mm-hmm. I think there were some things on tape that I could see a lot of front offices not liking. But to get him where they did, true number one upside, deep threat, I think pairs really well with Pittman Jr. working the intermediate part of the field, Josh Downs in the slot. To me, Brett, those are two of the best 30 players in the draft, and for the Colts to get both of them is awesome.
I mean, I had A.D. Mitchell as a potential to go to 17 with the Jags. Like, yeah. That's how I thought he was the fourth best receiver in this class. I had him right ahead of Brian Thomas Jr. Phenomenal route runner. He's a true X. Like, he can actually beat press coverage, which there were some receivers that went way ahead of him that I don't think were very good against press. Look at the LSU kids against Florida State, like Renardo Green, who ended up going at 64 to the Niners. He gave up like nothing against those guys because Renardo's like an actual NFL caliber press corner, and he gave up two hitches the entire game. Because the LSU receivers just weren't super great against press on the outside, whereas AD was. He went up against like Kool-Aid and Tarian and was catching go balls down the boundary, you know, had a big, big day against Alabama. I want to address the whole like didn't interview well thing which Chris Ballard came out against.
Oh, right. Yeah, that was aggressive.
It was very aggressive. Yeah. I do want to give some context because I had a couple people that are type one diabetic, just like A.D. Mitchell is, reach out to me and they say, hey, the thing about like massive mood swings in the first part of a day for a type one diabetic is very real. Like we don't feel human until our blood sugar gets regulated by the middle of the day. And I thought back to, OK, well, when do the combine interviews take place? They take place in the morning. So it's entirely possible that A.D. Mitchell, which I've heard he's a great kid, that kind of came out of nowhere for me, like all the whole didn't interview well thing. But I thought back to it. I was like, okay, well, if all of his interviews were in the morning at the combine, you're dog tired at the combine. Everybody is, right? And like your blood sugar is not regulated and you're doing this interview at like 8 a.m. Like I could see a scenario where that just kind of worked against him, but he's like genuinely a great human being and a great kid and practices hard, and it's just wrong timing, you know, on interviews, but the Colts brought him in and he was great. And they're like, I don't know what you guys are talking about. Like, that's kind of how I interpreted it, was just the scheduling of some of these interviews might've given people an impression that wasn't true.
Yeah. I didn't know any of that. For me, when I was saying, you know, oh, I can see why some front offices didn't like it, I would say like that was about the tape and sort of the lack of production and certain games where it's like, is he really running 100% on, you know, every route?
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah.
And I think that probably also contributed to him falling, if I had to speculate, because as you said, the skill set is that of a true number one. I mean, he's so fast. He's, I think, a really skillful route runner at his size. He's sudden. Hands are amazing. I'm just so glad they added someone for Richardson too, because I like Pittman, I like Downs, but it felt like they still needed some juice on offense. Mm-hmm. And this draft for them, that's a really important priority. It kind of gets slept on because he didn't play last year, Richardson, so much of last season. I feel like he's sort of like a forgotten man a little bit from that draft right now, you know? So for them to go out and get a player with superstar potential, I just loved. All right, you go next.
So there was a lot of teams to choose from. I liked a lot of the drafts that came out this year. But I kind of zeroed in on Buffalo. And you know, a few weeks ago, we talked about how they might be in like a little bit of a soft reload, not a rebuild, but a reload, because of the jettisoning of a lot of veteran talent. They lost 5 of their 8 captains. And I think that was like before Stephon was even gone. Like they lost a lot of guys, right? Because they're kind of up against it financially. And so they had to retool some things. And in my head, I was like, they really got to nail this draft. They have to nail this draft to infuse this roster with more young, cheap talent at positions of need and kind of rebuild the depth on this roster. They were okay. They were going to be like a playoff team, but this draft is what's going to determine if they're like a real contender again in short order. And I think they nailed it. Like, if we're going pick by pick for Buffalo, you know, they traded down and got some extra assets. Keon Coleman at pick 33, I thought was fantastic. He's going to be a really good big slot for them. Cole Bishop is one of the better safety slash nickel prospects in this class. He's honestly very Micah Hyde-ish. So I really like that fit for them. Cole Bishop out of Utah. Dwayne Carter is like a really aggressive, explosive interior defensive lineman for them. Ray Davis is like a very Buffalo Bills bowling ball type running back. He's going to get a lot of carries in December. Cedric Van Perren is exactly their type of center. Not the most gifted zone blocker, but in terms of just being a tree stump and pass protection, like, he's going to be great for them. And then you go even further in day 3, and I know that soft place in your heart for this one. Edifuan Ulufosio was my linebacker 3.
Really?
In this whole class. Oh, yeah. Huh. He plays in the mid-230s. He's exceptional in pass coverage. A lot more physical than you expect for somebody in the mid-230s. Yeah. Like, he can actually stack and shed on guards. The only reason he dropped so far is because of medicals. But, I mean, I'm sure you talk to anybody in the UW program. They love that kid. He just sounds like every other Bills linebacker for the last 10 years. I thought he was great. And then Javon Solomon out of Troy. Super sleeper. You know, kind of a sawed-off pass rusher. He's like 6'2", 235. Great bend. Great first step. He's a little bit different style than a lot of their other edge picks in recent years, but like, top to bottom, this Bills draft hit a lot of positions of need. They got a lot of talent, and it wasn't sexy, but they're going to get probably 4, maybe 5 contributors out of this class.
Let's zero in on Coleman for, you know, a minute, because they took him with the first overall pick of the second round after trading out of the first round, where they had the pick with the Chiefs, who took Xavier Worthy, which rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. And it's so funny. Like, I had mixed feelings about that. On one hand, you know, I think the Chiefs are playing Buffalo in, or the Bills in Buffalo this year. If they come and Xavier Worthy goes off for like a 65-yard touchdown, everyone's going to talk about this, right? So there's that side of it, which is the why would you do business with the team that, of course, famously trade with you to get Patrick Mahomes, this team that's been the source of so much misery for you, this team that took a player that seems like a hand-in-glove fit for what they need. But the other flip side of that is the Bills didn't need Xavier Worthy. They needed a player like Keon Coleman. So, you know, I have like mixed feelings about it, Brett. Like, I totally understand why everybody was shaking their head. But if it was any other team, I think it would have been a bit of good business because it did make sense for them. And they were still able to get a player that, to your point, I think really fits what they were looking for on offense more. They have a fast guy, Khalil Shakir, who's like been really slept on, but was like unbelievably productive for them as a deep target in the second half of last season. They needed like a big ball winner. And that's what Keon Coleman is. I know that there's some legitimate skepticism about his separation ability. And I think some of that is I think he's faster than he is given credit for, at least a little bit. Maybe not in terms of like long speed, but in terms of like his suddenness and his work at the line of scrimmage. But they just need a guy who will work sort of the intermediate part of the field, red zone. Josh Allen can trust, and Josh Allen will trust. And for Coleman, God, what a dream. I mean, it was cool because I saw him in his camp at the combine, and I could tell they seemed a little like bummed out, you know, because he didn't run a good 40. He was good in the gauntlet or whatnot. But to land in, to drop in the first round, fine. He was kind of a marginal first round pick, but to land in Buffalo, I mean, my God, you could not be happier if you're him.
It's interesting how Kansas City and Buffalo are kind of switching places, where in the last few years, Kansas City was very much an eat your vegetables type of offense, right?
Yeah.
It was a lot of quick game, you know, layups, and we're going to get yak. Like, we're going to get explosive plays through yak. We're going to give Patrick, and not that he needs it, but like, we're going to give Patrick just easy completions and let our targets shoulder a little bit more of the load than earlier in Patrick's career, where we're bombing it down the field and trying to make stuff happen, you know, out of structure and all that kind of stuff. They became very much a, we are staying in structure, we're being efficient, and we're always just going to move the ball forward. Was it as flashy? No, but they won two Super Bowls in a row doing that. Now you got Hollywood, you got Xavier Worthy. You know, they took the TCU tight end who I first time he breaks a tackle this year might be the first time I've ever seen him do it, but he's a real good seam ripper. So now it kind of feels like the Chiefs are getting back to, okay, yeah, let's throw it more than 15 yards down the field, while Buffalo's kind of transitioning to that eat your vegetables offense. We're going to run the ball more. We're going to have more yak targets because Keon Coleman is a great yak target. We're going to build an offense out of four slot receivers that are all different body types, but boy, they're all really good in the slot. And I think Buffalo transitioning from that vertical offense where there was a lot of, you know, bombing it down the field with Stephon Diggs and Gabe Davis and all that huge EPA per play numbers because they're getting 40-yard completions from their own 7-yard line and installing out at midfield. Now it kind of feels like they're transitioning to a more efficiency-based mindset. That's what Keon Coleman is. He's efficient.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to get you first downs. He's going to keep the offense alive. He's going to give you more opportunities. If you're not getting sevens, you're still at least going to get threes. Like, that's what people don't realize. You look at the Buffalo offense last year, you know, halfway through the year before they had the transition offensive coordinator, they kicked less field goals than everybody because they kept stalling out at midfield. They weren't running the ball. So it was either we get seven or we get nothing. And so they were the best EPA per play offense that scored no points.
and I think another thing that's get lost a lot when people talk about Josh Allen is, and his development over the last couple of years, is he has become an efficient quarterback. He will take his gains. You know, like he's not always, I think we think of him, oh, he just hunts for the big play, and that's who he was. And so there are times where he does resort to that a little bit, often just out of like pressure or whatnot. But there have been, you know, very long stretches in the season where he has been as, I think, smart and efficient as any quarterback in football. So I love this for them. Okay, so my next winner is a team that I feel like, so I sent you my winners first. I feel like if I hadn't sent you this team, you probably would have sent it to me. It's the Pittsburgh Steelers, correct?
Oh, you beat me to it.
I mean, freaking hit this one out of the park, this team. I think I maybe had them last year too with, Joey Porter Jr. and Broderick Jones. Just to recap, first four picks, Troy Fautanu, the offensive lineman out of Washington, Zach Frazier, center, West Virginia, Roman Wilson, Michigan wide receiver, Peyton Wilson, linebacker, NC State, and then Mason McCormick. Just unbelievable blend of best player available meets need, meets fit, meets value. I just look at all these picks and I love every single one of them, to be honest. Starting with Fautanu, who I thought would go higher, quite frankly. And him and Frazier are joining now a Pittsburgh offensive line that they've worked on a lot and has gotten better, but still has areas of need, notably left tackle. Now, I don't know if they view Fautanu as their starting left tackle or if they want to move Broderick Jones, kick him inside. I don't know. But the point is, you bring him in the building, he's, I think, instantly the best offensive lineman. It will be, maybe not immediately. And then center was an obvious area of need for them. So in Zach Frazier, they get, along with Jackson Paris Johnson, depending who asks, best center available. Roman Wilson, I mean, God, he's such a perfect fit for exactly what they need to pair with George Pickens, not just because he blocks, although that's very funny, but the toughness, the ability to work over the middle of the field on crossers and do kind of like the dirty work of a wide receiver, just massive. So before we get to even those other two picks, I mean, as they were coming in, how did you view those first three?
I absolutely loved it, mainly because it feels like it's been a long time since we've seen the Steelers have a good offensive line. They have a strong defensive tradition, but they're supposed to have a strong offensive line tradition too. And once upon a time, you know, you had that line with David DeCastro and Pouncey and, you know, even Villanueva when they came over. Yeah. The Killer Bees era was defined by the fact that they had a really good offensive line too. That's what made it work. And they got away from that, and the whole team kind of went down the tubes offensively because of that. There were obviously some other issues too. They missed on a quarterback. They missed on an offensive coordinator hire, but I still think they could have made it work if the offensive line was as good as this one is going to be. Because ultimately, offensive line other than quarterback is the only position group that has a huge impact on every single play, no matter down, distance, run, pass. Like, you need an offensive line to function. And now, for the first time in darn near a decade, not only do they have a good starting five, but they have great depth too. Like, I want to bring up Mason McCormick, who played, I think, in 57 starts at South Dakota State. He is the seventh most athletic guard prospect since 1987. Can also play center too. So he gives you the versatility that you can only you only have to dress seven offensive linemen on Sundays, because you have Mason McCormick, who could be your backup center and your backup swing guard. Crazy athletic. Also, at Shrine Bowl, they were having him practice snapping, and he was the best center at Shrine Bowl while also being an experienced guard prospect. And he has experience calling protections as a guard for a national championship program at South Dakota State. Love, love, love that pick. Like, if Russ and or Justin Fields doesn't work now, what's the excuse?
Yeah, it really is a great setup with that line, that run game. And again, I think, like, Roman Wilson wasn't the sexiest receiver pick, right? Like, you know, he was, I there were all these guys I lumped together who were like just receivers. I was like, they're going to be good in the NFL. They might not be number ones. Roman is, he's slot only in my estimation, but you have a number one. You have George Pickens. You needed a guy who, frankly, does exactly what Roman Wilson does well on that offense. I love what he's going to do for the run game as well. I just think it was such a great pairing of that receiver room with the receiver who just fits perfectly in it. Really quick, Peyton Wilson. I talked about him with Mike Renner in a combine preview. Someone whose tape I really enjoyed a lot out of NC State, linebacker. Medicals and age were kind of what were driving him down. Lenny just walked in. Revealed to me at the combine that he doesn't have an ACL or something. So that is I don't know how that's possible, but medically, that is certainly a ding. But, you know, end of the third round, I forgot where they picked him in the third round. They picked him somewhere later in the third round. Linebacker is obviously a need for them. We'll see. But just based on tape, I feel like definitely worth the draft pick.
I mean, it wouldn't be a Steelers draft without taking a high upside player with knee issues in the middle of the draft. So we had Darnell Washington last year, Peyton Wilson this year. We'll figure it out.
All right. So what do you want to talk about next? For next winner for you?
I feel like nobody ever talks about the Arizona Cardinals. And we should talk about the Arizona Cardinals. Monty was cooking in this draft. Obviously, he's known for wheeling and dealing, which he did plenty. I think they had 8 of their draft picks were the results of trades. And they had, might have been close to 12 players, maybe even more drafted. I'll read them off very quickly. Marvin Harrison Jr., Darius Robinson, Max Melton, Trey Benson, Isaiah Adams, Tip Ryman, who's a great blocking wide tight end, Elijah Jones, super high upside outside corner, Dadrian Taylor Demerson, who's maybe, other than the first rounders, my favorite pick they made. Ask anybody from Lubbock, Texas. They would absolutely kill for that kid. He's like a hybrid safety nickel who models his game after Tyrann Mathieu. Xavier Thomas, high upside edge. Christian Jones, I don't know why he fell around 5, but like he was Daniel Jeremiah's 55th overall player, I think it was, at tackle. Tawan Palmer from UAB, and then Jaden Davis out of Miami. Even if only half of those guys hit, that's 6 hits in a draft class. Like, I love this shotgun approach for them, not to mention the shotgun approach where they're taking really good players. Like, you got Marvin, you got Darius, you got Rabbit. It's awesome. Like, it's a great class.
Yeah. I was debating for a while, should they trade down? I don't think it sounds like, based on where McCarthy went, a trade up wasn't the massive haul we speculated. A team trying to jump the Giants wasn't available because the Giants didn't want J.J. McCarthy, which, we can talk about. By the end of it, I was like, nah, they should just stick and take Harrison Jr. because they have all these draft picks. And as you say, they became more draft picks. But, at a certain point, you got to start building the core of your team with this rebuild. And the core from last year obviously decided to stick with Kyler, Trey McBride, Paris Johnson. Defensively, you got Buda Baker and Jalen. The safeties are set. Zaven Collins showed some stuff at edge. But there are so many holes that they just needed to fill with young players to feel good about. So to your point, if obviously Harrison Jr., I think we all view as like the closest thing to a sure thing in this draft. So you're set there. Darius Robinson, that was the one where I was like, I don't know. It's 27. So at that point, the top edges were gone. I probably would have taken Johnny Newton, but that might just be because I'm in love with Johnny Newton. I do like Darius Robinson. I think he is an interesting identity player for that defense because he's sort of – he's a little bit of a tweener, right? But he's got that like size, physicality, power. I think it'll be, man, the combination of him and Collins is like an all-time like off the bus duo right there. Yep. And I didn't watch Max Melton, but I know everybody is, there's a lot of, he has a lot of fans at corner. That was obviously an area of need for them. And then Trey Benson, I mean, God, the combination of him and Connor is going to be a nightmare for the NFC West. Arizona Cardinals quietly had one of the best run games in football last year with Connor. Like nobody talks about the Cardinals, but he was like unbelievably good. And now they just got even better. And Benson to me had the most upside of any of the running backs in the draft. That's how I viewed him anyway. So adding him there, third round, I like it a lot. It feels like, okay, we're starting to get our guys in the building.
It's starting to feel like you can have Cardinals as like a 7 seed and be like, maybe.
If Kyler plays well. I've been dancing around. Let's talk about J.J. McCarthy and the Vikings because I have them as a winner. Not everybody does because they made some unbelievably aggressive moves in this. Not unbelievably aggressive, actually. They're not unbelievably aggressive. That's why I have them as a winner because all draft process, everybody was, they're going to have to give a haul to go up and get J.J. McCarthy. It's going to cost pick 23 and next year's first. And, and then it turns out they only had to move up one spot to get him to pick 10 because, and this is something I kept asking this question the weeks leading up to the draft and nobody really had a good answer for me. And I kept saying, what if the Giants don't actually like J.J. McCarthy? Or what if they don't want him? It was kind of this like, because I was thinking, if they don't, then suddenly, how much is it really going to take? Because you're competing with teams, maybe, but you're not having to jump that far. And that's what happened. It ultimately, the Giants didn't want him. The Giants passed on him. And Brett, like, I kind of, the reason I was asking that question is because you never really heard any strong reporting linking them to JJ. Like, it was,
yeah,
you know, I think everyone kind of just assumed that, like, oh, they must be interested because, you know, it's Daniel Jones and everybody knows they want to move on from Daniel Jones and they don't want to. Well, turns out they didn't really want him. It might have been also that they just, you know, like, love neighbors, and I completely understand why. But I think for the Vikings, you never want to reward a team for what they didn't do. But the fact that they didn't have to go up and spend much to get McCarthy, and then they had Dallas Turner, and this was very rich. And this is why, like, I will understand if anyone says this was too much for Dallas Turner. They gave up next year's third, fourth, fifth. This year, our Seth Walder said the equivalent was like giving up an extra mid-round first, which is that's a lot. It's funny because it's kind of like the budget version of what the Cardinals did last year, right? Mm-hmm. With the quarterback, and they're like, oh, found money. Let's go get a pass rusher. But I think the reason why, Brett, I'm not that hard on the Vikings for either of these two moves is I view them as like a legitimate win now team. I look at that team and I'm like, you're ready to win. And so for them to get the best, you know, a guy who a lot of folks had the best edge rusher, depending on how you view Latu and whatnot. And then McCarthy, who I think a lot of people, myself included, view as a really good fit for their offense. I just feel like if you're a Vikings fan, you're a lot happier today than you were a week ago when you were apprehensive about, like, oh my God, we're you know, get ready to learn Bo Nix, buddy. So I understand the value argument against all of this. And they also added Kyrie Jackson, who's a corner I like, we can talk about later. But just focusing on those first two picks and everything they did, everything the GM did, I just feel good about it. I don't know.
It feels like the future of the franchise is solidified. Because, yes, they went on a run a couple years. Well, they got stymied by Daniel Jones in the playoffs. But, you know, they won a lot of games a couple years ago, and the fan base was super hyped about having another, you know, potential championship caliber roster this last year. And honestly, they looked like a pretty good team before Kirk went down. Like, Kirk was on a heater, right? I think they actually could have been a real threat in the NFC if Kirk didn't pop his Achilles. Like, the defense was way better last year compared to 2022. Obviously, he still had a bunch of offensive firepower. Like, I don't know. I feel like the Vikings could have actually been a threat last year. But there was a lot of consternation, I guess you could say, of what about 2028, not just 2024 or 2025. And so I think getting JJ McCarthy, it's almost like a relief for Vikings fans, because it's like, okay, this window isn't the only window, right? Yeah. We're going to have a talented young quarterback that's really cheap, which means we can keep spending to keep improving this roster that we already think is really good. You know, potentially have a 5-year window here where it's not just we're going all in on Kirk and spending a bunch of money like what we thought the Falcons were going to do, right? And so I feel like Vikings fans are very relieved because they now feel like their window has been extended. And oh, by the way, we got Dallas Turner, who might have been the best edge in this class. So yeah, I really like what they did. It wasn't a lot of volume like Arizona or Buffalo, but the players they got were really good. And for a roster that was already really good, that's kind of what they needed. Just some finishing pieces. And then, you know, we'll rock and roll.
Yeah, it's like if you're a rebuilding team, I think this would be pretty bad business. I mean, they don't have any draft picks next year, right? You know, but because, like, I do really believe there were like a couple players away, not just from being competitive now, but, you know, being competitive in the long term. They're about to pay Justin Jefferson, you know, the GDP of Bahrain or whatever. Like, they needed you could not walk out of this draft with a quarterback. And typically, when you're operating from a position of such desperation, bad things happen. Mm-hmm. But the bad thing didn't happen. They had the quarterback that everybody kind of, I mean, I know, you know, I'm sure they would have loved Drake May, but that was never actually realistic, it sounds like. So I think considering the level of need and desperation they went into this draft, and then the fact that it didn't pan out in, you know, like they didn't get like totally taken for a ride, especially for the quarterback. I think that's pretty good. Real quick on Turner. It's an overpay for sure. And I think you can't justify it. Like, it's similar to the Anderson thing where, you know, when that happened, it was like, oh, well, you know, if you think about CJ Stroud and you lump them together, you got to do the same thing here. And I get that. But that said, two thoughts. One, they're going to be good, I believe. So I think it's, we're not talking about, like, I think that'll mitigate the draft value to some extent. And then the other thing about Turner is I love this fit. It's funny because we spent so much time talking about JJ McCarthy and his fit in this offense. I really don't need to get into any more at this moment. But Turner, I think, is also like quietly a great fit for them. So, you know, it's a 4-3, and obviously we associate Brian Flores with blitzing a ton and asking a lot of his defensive linemen in terms of games, dropping into coverage, all of that. So I think Turner's athleticism, and he dropped into coverage a fair amount in college, will certainly factor in. But this will allow Flores to dial it down a little bit, and he doesn't have to come in and be the number one immediately because they went out and they paid Jonathan Grenard. I think that's just I think it's like really one of the best possible landing spots for him when you take that into account.
You look at Grenard, you look at Dallas Turner, and boy, they love arm length. For pass rushers, they love arm length. They also love guys who can play with their hand in the dirt or standing up. They love guys that they feel they can drop into coverage when they're bringing 4 weeks, and so we got to drop the other edge and have him play in space and potentially pick up a crossing route and not get pantsed. Like, it, schematically, like you said, he's a perfect fit because Dallas can drop, which I know sounds insane. Why are you taking an edge rusher that can drop? You take an edge rusher that can drop if you have a DC that drops his edges. Like, that's what you do. So I think it's a great scheme fit. He's supremely talented, one of the most talented edges that Alabama's put out, and that's saying a lot.
Ton of upside for him too. And he's so dumb. They took both of those guys, by the way, to go back to what you said at the top about sort of the contending in the near term, contending in the long term. These both players are both 21. McCarthy, Turner, and then I did real quickly. Kyrie Jackson is a corner who I did get to watch a little bit out of Oregon, just watching so much Oregon. Gigantic.
Yeah.
That I'll say about him. He's freaking huge. Yeah, a little raw, but I think, I don't know if we'll see if he has the opportunity to start day one.
They did you know what that pick felt like? Ah, crap. The Bears got Rome. Let's go find a corner that knows how to play against Rome. Like, that's literally what it is.
Yeah, a little bit of a heat check for them. Okay, who's your next winner?
My next winner, and you can kind of sense a theme here with my picks, Cincinnati Bengals, who had 10 picks. Again, considering the financial future of this team, you know, paying Joe a lot, going to pay Jamar a lot. We'll see what happens with Trey Hendrickson if they drop a little money to him to keep him from retire. Well, he threatened to retire. I don't think he's actually going to retire.
I think he'll stay, yeah.
But they need a lot of picks. They need a lot of young, cheap talent to kind of offset what their cap hits are about to be. They got Amarius Mims, who I think is arguably, other than Joe Alt, and maybe even more than Joe Alt, the most physically gifted tackle prospect in this class. He had less than 150 true pass protection reps over the last two seasons combined, meaning no play action, no RPO. And that's scary to take a guy top 20 where it's like, we have 150 decent reps to study, but boy, he was good on those 150. Like, he was phenomenal. He gave up nothing. I think his pressure allowed percentage was 0.6%, which is unheard of. So love Amarius Mims if he works out. He might challenge one of those starting spots over the other 6'8", 360-pound tackles they have. I really loved the Jermaine Burton pick in the third round. Again, I think, in terms of pure film grade, he's a top 10 receiver in this class. We'll see what happens with the off-the-field stuff. Eric All, talking about heat check pick. I mean, coming off a bunch of major injuries, but receiving tight end, or as far as receiving tight ends go, other than Brock Bowers himself, this is the most gifted receiving tight end in this class. They doubled up with Tanner McLaughlin. And then I want to talk about their seventh-round pick, Matt Lee, center out of Miami, which I know sounds... like, Brett, what are you doing here?
I'm not even going to pretend like I have any thoughts on this, but please continue.
Phenomenal pass protector at center. Like, phenomenal pass protector. You know, he went up against a gauntlet in the ACC when he up against Braden Fisk, Ruka Roro. Like, he didn't give up anything against those guys. He's got a great anchor. I think he's a much better run blocker than people give him credit for. I thought Matt Lee, like, honestly could have gone in the third or fourth round, and they got him in the seventh. So maybe there's a medical thing. I don't know. But if you love seventh round centers, it's a show for you.
I really liked their approach, especially early in the draft, going trenches, because I think it hits both media need potentially and upside, particularly with Mims. But I say immediately, they designed Trent Brown to be a right tackle, 1 year deal. If he gets hurt, I really believe Mims can come in and play. Obviously, got Orlando Brown on the left side. I think just continuing to add there and not take pass protection for granted, given everything that this franchise has been through on the offensive line, makes a lot of sense. I've spoken about Mims a lot. I'm really, really high on him watching. I mean, I think he looks unbelievable to me whenever I watch him. And then Chris Jenkins, that's another, I just really, really liked that pick a lot. The defensive tackle out of Michigan. You know, I had thought of them as a potential Byron Murphy Jr. destination, maybe Newton. And in Jenkins, I think they got the next best option there. Huge glaring hole for them on that defensive line. And I think maybe even he's better, I think, against the run than Newton. And that was a huge problem for them on the defensive line last season. So he's a guy who I expect to see the field pretty dang quickly.
Yeah, Jenkins is phenomenal against the run.
Yep.
Like, phenomenal.
They need it. Okay, wrapping things up with my final winner. And by the way, I should say, I'm going to talk about I'm doing two pods this week. Field Yates is coming on later, and we're going to talk about a lot of the other teams that we haven't gotten to today. So if you're listening to this and you're like, why are you talking about my team? I hate you. We'll probably get to them. So I was tempted to go to the Eagles, but then I was like, I don't want to do the Eagles again. Even though I did, I mean, there's a lot to like from their draft. I'll probably talk about them in more depth on Wednesday. I'm going to go with the Chargers. And I had somewhat mixed feelings about this because I probably would have taken Neighbors if it was me drafting. However, when they took Ladd McConkey at the top of the second round, they traded up for him. I just felt so much better about the fact that they didn't go receiver and that they went alt. And I was like, oh, the vision is rounding into place. Now, look, like, Joe Alt, I mean, he's the best offensive tackle in this class. And I realize you got Rashawn Slater. By the way, they came out, I don't know if you saw this. Harbaugh said Rashawn Slater is our left tackle, like confirmed it. So they're moving Joe Alt probably to the right tackle, which is what the Lions, of course, did with Penei Sewell when they drafted him. That worked out pretty well. This is going to be the best offensive line Herbert's played behind. We'll see. Center, obviously, is a bit of a question.
Since Oregon, when he had four NFL stars on that Oregon line.
So I absolutely love that. And then with McConkey, I think, like, it's such a good fit for Herbert because this is Herbert is a quarterback who sometimes, I think, in a way that kind of frustrates me, is very happy to check it down and make the right read. You know? And when I was looking at this Chargers roster, you had Quentin Johnson. It was obviously, it didn't work out last year. We'll see what happens this year with the drops and some of the consistency issues. Josh Palmer is, I guess, their wide receiver one or two. I'm going to plant my flag right now. McConkey's going to get the most targets on this football team. I fully believe that. I don't really do like fantasy implications after the draft. I would smash Ladd McConkey in every I just think Justin Herbert is absolutely going to love throwing in the football. And I also think this, Brett, and I've talked about McConkey. He's not just a check down merchant, like slot only, insert every stereotype you have. He can get open at all three levels. He's really good with the ball in his hands. I think he can play Z. I think he can play outside as well. I just absolutely love this pick for them. And I haven't gotten to Junior Colson, who they took in the third round. But that, to me, it was like once they got McConkey, I was like, ooh, suddenly I like it. Is that bad process on my part? Because no. I would have taken Neighbors, but...
No. That's actually better process. And I'll tell you why. If you're packaging Malik Neighbors plus the tackles that were available at the Ladd McConkey pick, yeah. versus Joe Alt and Ladd McConkey.
Yeah.
Which package would you rather have? Right? Like that, they had a huge need at tackle. They really did. Not to mention, Joe Alt is a gifted tackle. Like, I know for a fact that the Cardinals were thinking about taking Alt over Marvin. Like, they were thinking about it. Like, that's how high everybody's grade is on Alt. Like, my comp for him was Jake Long. Like, that's the kind of athlete we're talking about here. Like, pre-injury Jake Long, obviously. And, you know, people were saying, like, yeah, but Justin, like, we want to have Justin have, like, the best receiving core possible here. And it's like, well, what about Justin having the best protection possible? And then you trust that you have the guy that can make receivers work. Like what KC did, where they thought they had the guy that if we just, after that Tampa Super Bowl, invest in the offensive line, trade Tyreek, and then we have like our one go-to guy with Travis, and we trust that Mahomes is good enough with protection to make Travis and a collection of other dudes work. You know, you look at C.J. Stroud. Like we trust that we have the guy in C.J. Stroud that when you have two good tackles with Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard, he can make our receiving corps full of third-round picks, you know, Tank Dell, and like he can make it work. And he did. So it's like, if you think you have the guy, protect the guy and trust him to elevate his receivers. And I'll tell you what, if Ladd McConkey gets elevated, he's going to be really darn good. So
yeah.
I love the process.
If Alt is who we think he is, they are set at both tackles for the next decade, right? Like that's such an unbelievable place to be in as a franchise, given how much that position costs, by the way, in free agency. It gets talked about a lot through the lens of Harbaugh, run the ball, you know, power football, and that's fine, but you don't have to think of it from a philosophical standpoint. You can look at just pure team building, roster construction, optimizing, thinking about, you know, who you have, who you can get, who was available in the draft. It makes a lot more sense to me when you think about it that way, and you think about the depth of those two positions that you talked about. So I really liked it. I feel better about this team than I did before. That said, you know, if Malik Nabers is as electric as we think he's going to be, there will be games, you know, like we're going to, it'll be hard for Chargers fans to watch, or Adunze, who would have been amazing in this offense as well. But I do really like Ladd McConkey. All right, let's take a quick break, come back, and we'll finally address the Michael Penix in the room.
Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? Two words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app. It's an empire. 21 and older must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited.
Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. Or in Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.com. West Virginia, visit 1800gambler.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans. Massachusetts, if you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7111. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Okay, Brett, we're back. We're going to talk about the Falcons. Now we're going to talk about things that made us go, So not losers, just things that made us go home. I have talked about this Michael Penix pick quite a bit. I think you have too. I think we all have. It is one of the most shocking draft picks of my lifetime. Is that hyperbolic? I just didn't. I owe an apology to, we have a producer named Greg Shapiro. And I think there was a report maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago where, I don't know if it was Jeremy Fowler, but somebody was like, oh, the Falcons really liked Penix when they worked him out. And Chap was like, let's lead the show with this. And I was like, no. I said, they're not taking Penix. What a dumb, like, this is, it's not even worth talking about. So sorry, Shap. We should have talked about it because I'm an idiot and they did like him. I think the way I want to approach this is to try to work through what possible justification they could have had. So let me go, I'll tell you what I've heard. And I have had colleagues who have defended this on shows. My understanding is they love the prospect. They viewed him as, I've heard anything from a top two quarterback to a top three quarterback in the draft. They figured that they would be so good, or at least good enough, to not have another shot at a quarterback that they truly loved. And they've been so bereft at the position that this is an opportunity to get a succession plan that will not be available again. Next year's draft is both bad, apparently. I try not to be too, and they may not have draft picks because of the tampering charges. So that is the case against it, or the case for it. My problem with everything I just said is, even if all of that is true, multiple issues with that line of thinking. One, if you're so good that you're not going to be in a position to take a quarterback again, maybe try to win. Maybe work on making your football team better, because you should be in a position to win the NFC South. And by the way, you have arguably the best pass rush, worst pass rush unit in football. So there's that. The other thing is, of course, about the succession plan is, we are talking about a prospect who is 24 years old, coming off with the major injuries, of course, was a quarterback who I thought should have come in and competed immediately, which is why I put him on the Raiders along with everyone else. Best case scenario here, Kirk, aside from Kirk getting hurt, in which case you have the world's most expensive insurance plan, Kirk plays 2 years, they cut him loose. It's like a $12.5 million cap hit. So you've got Michael Penix Jr. costing over $20 million, which is obviously a lot for a rookie quarterback at 26 years old. Fairly unprecedented for a first round pick. That just doesn't make sense to me. So thus concludes my monologue.
I get it and I don't get it at the same time, right? Because it feels like the Falcons are talking out of both sides of their mouth. Like, it kind of feels like they're not fully committed to one path or the other, right? Yeah. Of the, hey, and I'm not going to say the NFC is weak, but it's certainly not as big of a gauntlet as the AFC. So let's make a real run with Kirk here. We spent a bunch of money on defense the year before. We bring in Kirk. We've taken skill position players for like a decade and a half straight or whatever it is. Like, we got weapons. We got an offensive line. Like, let's go for this thing, right? That's what everybody thought they were going to do. And I think everybody was on board with that plan.
Everybody and loved the Kirk Cousins signing.
Everybody loved it, right? Yeah. And that's a totally viable plan. Another viable plan is, let's take Michael Penix. He's cheap, which means we can keep spending on defense like we've been doing, and we can keep bringing in free agents because we have a cheap quarterback. Like, it felt like they did both at the same time, which is what was so confusing about it. And it wasn't about the evaluation of Michael Penix, the prospect. It wasn't about, you know, can they go on a run with Kirk? It was about, can they do both at the same time? And the only reason that we could come up with, and you alluded to it, is they don't think they're going to have a first round pick next year. That's the only reason, because
yeah. So you Kirk can't approve the pass rush next year either. Sorry.
We'll see, but like, and also if you're looking at the quarterback class next year, it's like, even if there's a couple guys that emerge at the top, it's not deep.
Right.
Like this year's was, right? It's not deep. There might be one, maybe two, not five or six like in this class. And so if you're not going to have a first round pick, you're not going to get the guy next year. And Kirk's deal is effectively 2 years if you're just looking at the guarantee structure. Like, it's not like a great cap hit to take if they get rid of him after 2 years, but it's certainly not Russ's. Right. It's like, I think it's 25 if it's pre-June 1, and I think you said 12 and a half of post-June, whatever it is. Like, it's not horrifically bad. So it's effectively a 2 year deal. And so obviously they're thinking about getting a guy, and maybe they were thinking about getting a guy next year until the league basically said, like, Enjoy your first round picks while you got them.
Next year, though, then why did they give him $100 million? None of this makes – the problem is you can't reconcile anything about this pick with the Kirk Cousins contract. They don't go together, right?
Yeah.
The only way you can justify it is that they changed their mind or they fell so in love with the player. Like, there's no logical process where you make that – you do that Kirk Cousins deal thinking you're going to take a quarterback now. It doesn't make sense at the top of the draft. Now – it's possible that they changed their mind. I think that's what happened. I think they just fell in love with the player. I don't think there was any logic. I don't think they thought about, maybe they thought we'll take Rattler or someone later on. You know, I don't think that. I don't think they thought they were going to take Michael Penix Jr. I don't think so. And otherwise, you don't do that deal. You just don't. Where they did.
I think it's a people business, right? And even you and I, how many times did we change our minds on players between January and now, where you go back and you watch somebody and you're like,
yeah.
Damn, I do kind of like him a lot, right? And maybe that happened with them where they're like...
That's exactly what happened. 100%.
Man, I kind of like Michael Penix.
When we talked about it the day after, Dan was like, well, you know, like if you had opportunity to take... Let's say you truly believed, you know, he's the second best quarterback in the draft and you have this opportunity to take him. And I have two objections to that. One, you're on an island if you believe that. I mean, you and I, we're not even talking about the player. I don't think, first of all, the notion that other teams tried to take a Penix, trade up and take Penix, some of those, the ones that have been reported, I know are just not true. I'll just say that. Some of them maybe, some are not. So there's that. But you know you're on an island there. So you, not only are you, like, this is it insane from cap and roster construction, whatever, like, your evaluation of the player is unique, which typically doesn't work out, by the way. Yeah. But let's say they had an opportunity, first of all, if they were picking at the top and they had the opportunity to take Caleb or whatever, they would just do that. They never would have signed Kirk, right? But the other thing is, like, and this is kind of this whole debate highlights a tension that every team has to face, which is, do you take the best player available or do you draft for need? And so I think the Falcons would say, we took the best player. He was the best player on our board. We didn't have Lautulatu. We know they like Lautulatu because they tried to come back up and get him, but we didn't, you know, we thought Penix Jr. and like quarterback, and that's fine. But running an NFL team isn't just taking the best player available. You have to like have a plan for that player. It's not just like you along those lines, you know, the Arizona Cardinals should have taken Michael Penix Jr. The LA Chargers should have taken Michael Penix Jr. Like you, if you have a quarterback who's making this much money and you believed in him, this isn't even like a mistake. It's not even like, oh damn, we paid Kirk last year and he kind of sucked. He hasn't played. So it just doesn't make sense.
Do you think they're terrified of what happened to Denver happening to them?
That's a good
question. Where you make a gamble on a veteran.
If you're that terrified, you shouldn't pay him that kind of money. That's what I keep going back to. It's like you can't – I think all of the justifications for this involve them hedging on Kirk. But if you're already hedging on Kirk, don't do the contract. So I just keep going back to, there's no way to reconcile these two decisions, right? Like you can reconcile each of them independently, but they don't go together. And for this to work out, one of those decisions has to be wrong. It's like a math problem.
Scared money don't make money. And that kind of felt like scared money.
Yeah. Like, oh, we've been so haunted at this position. We got to take, you know, like we're going to double down on it. And like, that's just not, there's a reason. I mean, I just texted all my various friends I have from teams and everybody was shocked. I didn't talk to a single person. I was like, yeah, that makes sense.
We were doing a live stream during it and I got a text from my buddy in a different front office in the AFC and he's like, shocker incoming. And I was like, for Atlanta, like what could possibly be shocking about Atlanta? And then the pick got read and I was like, oh, that. But even other front offices were like, what?
Yeah, everybody, and people had nothing to gain, you know, I'm not a reporter. I'm not like, just, yeah. Okay, I'll say something nice about the Falcons. I like Brandon Norlis, where they got him in the fourth round, the defensive tackle. I mean, they did commit to their defense afterwards. They took Rook Ohoro, who is a player I did not evaluate. I know a lot of people viewed that as a reach. I'm not going to have a strong opinion about that. They did trade up for him. Him going over Newton, I think, was a shock for a lot of folks. So, and you know how much I love Newton. Braylon Trice, who's an edge out of Washington, who came on at the end of the season and is a player I do like, and I think is an ascent. Like, I think he could be better in the NFL even than what we saw in college. JD Bertrand, linebacker out of Notre Dame. Like, they threw everything at the other side of the ball after the Penix pick. But yeah, it's just.
I almost kind of blacked out on the Falcons like after pick 8, and I had to go back and like look at their class after the draft. I was like, who did they even take?
Okay. Yeah. So we both had that as our, I'll go first too, and we can go a little bit quicker. The Broncos are kind of lucky that the Penix thing shook everyone so much that nobody really, I feel like they didn't take a lot of heat for the Bo Nix pick at 12 because of the Penix pick at 8. Do you agree?
I mean, I was higher on Bo Nix than a lot of people. Like I mean, hell, I put Nix to them at 12 in my what I would do mock, not even just a predictive mock, but a what I would like. I'm pretty high on Bo Nix.
Let's give it. Yes, I want to hear the upside, the good case for this.
So he's very experienced, literally the most experienced college quarterback ever. He's seen everything. He's done everything. Much better arm than I think he's given credit for. Obviously, Oregon didn't let him throw down the field that much because of the nature of their system. It's wider hashes, so they've always been kind of a horizontal offense, even across different regimes. I really didn't want to make the same mistake I made with Justin Herbert, where I dinged him for playing in a horizontal offense, when it's like, it's not about what he could or couldn't do. It's just about what the coaches wanted him to do. And if you're just looking at throws over 15 yards down the field and you're putting up a cut up of that, I was like, oh, he's actually like pretty good at that. I think he's mobile. I think he's creative against pressure. Obviously very mature, locker room leader, all that kind of stuff. The CEO types you want for your quarterback, but just like as a physical talent, I was like, oh, I actually like Bo Nix quite a bit. I had him in the same tier for me as JJ McCarthy. So him going at 12, I was like, okay. Cool. Especially for a team that like needs a quarterback.
That's when people are like, oh, why didn't the Broncos get as much heat? Well, they didn't have anyone on their roster, and they didn't have the draft capital elsewhere because the second rounder is gone. So they were a team that, like Minnesota, came into this draft with some degree of desperation. And I think it's good that they didn't have to sacrifice, trade picks to go up and get someone. I think for me with Nix, it's just the ceiling for, you know, I'm just like, I take a first rounder. Don't you want a guy who can be a dude in the NFL? And I have serious questions about that. I think he can be a competent quarterback, especially in a Sean Payton offense. But I'm like, the arm and how good can he really be? I will say, I love that they got Troy Franklin in the fourth round, who I don't know if you've heard any reasons on why he slipped so far. I didn't see any speculation about injuries or anything like that. They ended up
big thing was play strength. Like
play strength.
Yeah, he's very slight, right? And so, honestly, like I thought I was really low on Troy Franklin because I had a late round three, early round four grade on him. I expected him to go a lot higher. I just thought I was late, or I just thought I was low. But I really do think the ghost of like Tyquan Thornton was haunting teams on him because, you know, similarly really fast but really slender receiver with not a lot of play strength. I think people saw that second round pick for New England like not work out at all. People were like, let's take somebody with a little bit more meat on the bones.
I think there's two reasons I like him for Denver. One is I like it when college quarterbacks reunite with their receivers who they have success with. But also, assuming they stay with Cortland Sutton, stays on the team, I like his pairing with Sutton because Troy Franklin, I don't think, is an ex receiver in the NFL, but as like a Z who they can motion around and get free releases, and he's unbelievably fast. I think he's craftier down the field than he's given credit for. I like that pairing. So I like
bingo.
Yeah. And then they got my baby Estime, Thunder and Lightning. Okay. Let's talk about the Commanders. Cause this is another one where you had as a win. I had as a, but this is another, for me, good example of the draft, how it can sort of lead you to debate best player available versus need. And I think this is the Commanders draft illustrates that perfectly because I love the players they took in the second round. They took Johnny Newton, who I've been talking about, Mike Sannerstill, who I think is like everybody's favorite player in the draft. He's like, you know, just such a freaking fun, super feisty slot corner. He's Mike Hilton, you know. I think we may have even talked about it. However, right now, who is the starting left tackle for the Commanders?
Theoretically, maybe they try Coleman at it, their guard pick.
That's who they drafted in the third round, yeah. Otherwise, they have Cornelius Lucas, who I think is like a swing tackle in the NFL. Andrew Wiley's on the right side. I feel like this is kind of flying under the radar as a major concern I would have about Commanders offense, especially given that their quarterback got to play in college last year behind a left tackle who I think I might be more obsessed with than any other non-draftable prospect that I watched this year inadvertently, because Will Campbell's name is freaking awesome. This is a very different situation he's walking into, Brett.
I agreed with you about, okay, they need a tackle. They didn't take a tackle. What are we going to do? And I was struggling to reconcile that decision, because they made a decision to just not prioritize it. I struggled to reconcile that with like just all the really good players they took.
I know. It's like,
And so it's like, I didn't really know how to handle Washington, because I loved all their picks, but at the same time,
you just
took a rookie quarterback and you might get crushed and you're scared about it. And so I came up with a theory, and let me see if you like this. So when they took Johnny Newton, I immediately was like, yeah, but they have Payne and John Allen. Like, what's the plan here? So I looked at John Allen's contract.
I know you're trading. Your theory is going to be, sorry, I said the word. Yeah.
But John Allen, it's a $17 million savings. If they move on from him after this year, I could potentially see him as somebody who another team that doesn't have great defensive tackles might want to do an extension to soften that blow a little bit and get John Allen, who right now is 29, you know, get him through the rest of his prime. I think he's a piece that you could potentially like trade that plus a pick to get a tackle from somebody else who has a lot of tackles available for the picking. I'm in my head, this is just me.
No, like that would be phobium. I mean, I gotta think with the Newton pick that they're gonna move on from Allen. It has to be.
But if you're gonna move on from Allen,
and they paid Payne, like, all right, so yeah.
Yeah. If you're gonna do it, you might as well get something for him, which might be their path to a left tackle.
I would love that. I think the thing that it killed me was not Newton or even Sanders still, but at 2.21 they took Ben Sinnott, is his name.
I've heard three different pronunciations. I've heard Sinnott, Sinnott, and Sinnott.
So I'm not going to – people like him. I've seen mixed reports on him. I didn't watch his tape, so I don't have a strong opinion about the player, and tight end was a need for them. However, a bunch of offensive tackles went right after him. Blake Fisher out of Notre Dame, Roger Rosengarten, who I think is a really underrated offensive tackle out of UW, and then Kingsley Suamitia to the Chiefs. All went right after, and then they took their tackle after. So it's like, oh man, should you have? That's the one where I'm like, you could have taken but again, maybe that they weren't high on those players. I don't know. Maybe this is. I'm a little bit worried, but I feel conflicted because I have the first three. Like they're awesome players. Those defensive players are freaking awesome. I love them so.
It's also possible they might try Sam Cosmi at tackle, because he played tackle at Texas in college. And like maybe that's their ace up the sleeve, is you put Cosmi, who you move him from right guard to left tackle, you put Brandon Coleman at right guard, you still leave Wiley at right tackle. Like again, it's pure copium. I'm trying to find justifications.
But. All right. Yeah. I don't know. Well, yeah. TBD there. TBD.
TBD.
Maybe there's more to come. You had the Cowboys as a and I want to hear you talk about that.
I know running backs, quote-unquote, don't matter to a lot of people, but I kind of felt like the Cowboys really needed a running back, like really, really bad.
It doesn't have to be Jonathan Brooks, which whatever. Maybe that's too rich. Fine. The Panthers gave up, right? But there were a lot of good running backs in like the third and the fourth.
I didn't take any of them too.
Yeah.
Like it could have been Marshawn Lloyd. It could have been Trey Benson. It could have been... even Tyrone Tracy, Isaac Arendo, like Kyle Shanahan took yet another like mid round running back. Like they could have, I don't know, any of them.
Yeah,
any of them would have made sense.
Yeah, I don't. I. It's funny because the Cowboys did take like players I like. Obviously, the focus is the offensive line with Guyton. I'll be curious to see where they view him playing. But that it was a comprehensible pick. They get Cooper Beebe, who's a guard in the third round. Marshawn Nealon, edge rusher out of Western Michigan. I did get a chance to watch a little bit, and I do like him. Obviously, was not an area of need. They again, this was a very best player available need on the offensive line, for sure. But yeah, I was surprised they didn't take it back. Okay, so kind of similar, actually. Mine is going to be more just about less about the draft as a whole and more like, the Niners going Ricky Pearsall with the first their first pick, pick 131. That was surprising. I actually think the player makes a ton of sense for Kyle Shanahan. I am not surprised that he watched him and fell in love with him. He is the first word I think everybody try to talk about Ricky Pearsall without using the word tough, challenge, impossible. the dude is just nasty. He blocks. He which is obviously, you know, something that they prioritize a lot in San Francisco. Instantly, I think I could view him starting immediately when they, especially when they're an 11 personnel. The question is whether or not it means they're going to move on from one of their receivers. I don't think they are this year, especially since they didn't during the draft. But this is a lot. It's a, you know, for them, that's a high draft pick on a receiver. I think my is less being critical of the pick, Brett, and more, okay, what does this tell us about their plans for the future?
I think it, they spent two decently high picks on a receiver, like not even just Pearsall, but they double dipped at it, right? And so part of me thinks one of Ayuk or Debo is going. I just don't know which Debo. One.
It's funny because Pearsall is closer to Ayuk than Debo. I mean, no one's like Debo. So right now, if I had to guess, I think they're going to pay Ayuk, pay Purdy, either cut or trade Debo. However, like that's, and then thinking that, well, we have McCaffrey in the backfield, but the offense is going to have to evolve a bit, you know, if that happens. And it's just, it'll be interesting, not just from a roster management standpoint, but also like philosophically to see what happens, because this feels like a draft where like they're really telling us something about where they're going as an organization.
I do want to note, purely speculation, a post June 1st trade for Debo. It's only a $6.5 million dead cap hit and saves 22.
Really?
So if we could be looking at a late summer Debo trade to some contender who's like, we need a little bit more juice, and then you use that money, you do like a pre-camp extension by Ayuk, you still have a bunch of money to pay Brock. That's the scenario where I'm kind of thinking like maybe they're planning for after June 1st.
Fascinating. Yeah. Who would trade for Debo? He's such a huge
player. New England. Give May some more layups. I mean, yeah. A team that has a lot of money.
They got Polk, so they got the layup guy to me. I mean, he's a different player. He's a very different player.
Maybe if New Houston England really wants to go all in, just because. I mean, we know that Slowick knows Debo.
Yeah. I got to think about this one. All right. You had two other teams as questions. I think we're through mine. So why don't you start? Talk about the Giants. This is one where I'm very curious to hear what you have to say, because I actually really like this draft, but now I'm worried that I'm missing something.
No, I actually really do like the draft. My is more about Dable and Shane, because I expected them to look at quarterback. Again, if you're looking at like the human element of this, right?
Yeah.
Of like, taking quarterback equals job security, right?
Right. Yeah. And, right. And, oh, well, our future's on the bench, guys. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And so I kind of expected them to do that just for the sake of, we know Daniel Jones is not working out. We have a few, like, give us a shot. Like, even if everything falls apart and we only win 6 or 7 games, like, don't fire us. Like, JJ McCarthy's on the bench. Like, give us a year. See what we got. Like, and so that's what I kind of thought maybe they would be in line for a quarterback, of like, just for the sake of job security, because it's a tale as old as time. And then they didn't take a quarterback. Like, they didn't address it at all. And so now I'm thinking, maybe they already had job security. Maybe the Giants, basically, specifically ownership, who we know was the main driving force behind that Daniel Jones extension.
Yeah.
Maybe ownership already was like, we understand what you guys are working with. We're good. Build the roster. We already did the take the quarterback and then build the team thing. How about we do the build the team thing and then take the quarterback? You guys got 3 years. Build this the right way. Like, maybe they were already kind of told, you're fine, make smart decisions. And so my was more about,
interesting, yeah.
I don't think Dable and Shane are in as desperate a position as maybe we thought they were.
Dak Prescott's going to love throwing to Malik Nabers.
Oh my God. Cowboys fans would lose their mind.
No.
Or Kirk.
I do think that it's a great angle because the decision not to take a quarterback, we talked about at the beginning about the fact that there was never any really strong rumors linking them to J.J. McCarthy, and then they didn't take J.J. McCarthy. And then not only did they not take J.J. McCarthy, they didn't take anyone. That is organizational, right? Because, you know, I thought they would take one because Jones's contract isn't guaranteed next year, but it's guaranteed for injury. And, like, that's scary if you're a Giants fan. This is – you don't make this kind of decision, which is not – to pass on quarterback without everyone buying into that choice. So really quickly though, I do like, Nabers, you know, he's rocket ship, instantly going to be just an absolute, like, those two deep balls he's going to catch from Daniel Jones are going to hit like fire. No, sorry. I actually think Daniel Jones, when he does throw deep, actually throws like a pretty good deep ball.
The man can throw a slot fade, and that's what Malik Nabers does really well. Yeah. So even if that's the only route he runs, like, we're good.
And then I thought Tyler Newbin, huge area of need for them, safety, second round, not a reach. I think they did trade up for him though. Watching his tape, I was talking about it with Ryan Clark on NFL Live a little bit. Struck me as a guy who I think can just play right away. Super polished, super smart, good tackler, obviously had the ball production at Minnesota. Just made a ton of sense for them in the second round. So we'll see. It's going to be a very fascinating, fascinating season. And let's wrap with the Commanders, who was the other team, or no, the Raiders, rather, pardon me. I want to hear your thinking on this one, because this was a very interesting best player available versus need question draft. Is that what made you go or the fact that
made me go
Brock Bowers at pick 13?
I like the Brock Bowers, but honestly, I think it would have been Penix if Penix was available.
Yeah, same.
What made me go was, you know, you're rolling with Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell this year, and I think Gardner is a fine backup. I think Aiden O'Connell honestly will grow into being a fine backup. What made me go is that they didn't throw a dart anywhere later, you know, a Jordan Travis, a Michael Pratt.
Like, the fact that Rattler didn't go until the fifth, dude. The gap between the first round quarterbacks and Rattler, I think, was the largest ever I saw in the history of the NFL. I haven't talked about Rattler much. I did watch him a little bit, thinking like maybe some team will, you know. I actually loved, by the way, that the Saints took him. I think that's a totally sensible and smart dart throw for them, but. The Raiders
didn't do a dart throw. They didn't do any of them. And so that's what made me go, was, do they like Gardner and Aiden that much? Like, am I underrating how much they like those guys? Because the fact that they didn't even think about it was really fascinating to me.
All we're going to spend all season long saying the Raiders are a quarterback away, because the players they did get are freaking awesome. Brock Bowers is awesome. He's an awesome player. Jackson Powers Johnson, awesome. Need for them. Second round, center. Third round pick was an offensive tackle who I haven't watched out of Maryland. But they're going to have the most fire 12 personnel lineup in the NFL. But we're going to watch all year and be like, so they only had a quarterback. So I think for them, the is really like, okay, what's the plan? You know, next year. Are they the Dak? I'll stop it, Cowboys fans. You're mad listening to me. But who we don't know? Maybe there's going to be some quarterback who wants out. I don't know. But they're going to be the team next year's Falcons, where we are all like, okay, what's the plan at quarterback? And if
they're going to sign somebody for a lot of money and then draft one high anyway, is that?
so many jokes. Everybody kept doing the same joke about like the Falcons taking like Spencer Rattler and then the Falcons. I mean, I just, yeah, I don't know. Falcons fans, I complain because I love, they're my favorite fan base in the NFL. They're not, I'm not their favorite person right now, but
well, I don't like making fun of the Falcons because it feels like punching down at this point. Like, I'm like,
and I love Raheem Morris. I want them to be successful. I just, yeah.
Just every time they do something, I just, it's like, oh, honey, sweetie, baby, no. Like,
you know, it's like, just think of them so good. They should win. All right. All right. Well, we'll see. I'll get into it more in the coming weeks as I talk about the offense. And I won't get into the Penix. We'll get into Kirk Cousins in the offense. Brett, where can folks check out your work?
You can find me over on the Bootleg Football Podcast. EJ is somewhere recovering from our 18 hours of live streaming that we did over the draft weekend. Learn from the best. Shout out Scott Hansen. He trained me how to not eat for 8 hours at a time back in the red zone days. He was also out there in Detroit, too, holding it down on stage. But we did a whole 5 days total of live streaming. And you can find that over on the Bootleg Football Podcast. And now we're going to go do nothing for 2 weeks because that sounds great.
Awesome. I love that. I will not be doing nothing. I will be podcasting later this week with Field Yates. We're going to talk about all the teams we didn't get to. So if you're listening again, if you're Eagles fans, you're like, what the heck? We had the best draft. We had those two corners. We're probably going to talk about them on Wednesday. You can always check this podcast out on YouTube, youtube.com/@NinaKimes. Also, we were nominated for Best Sports Podcast in the Shorty Awards. There is a link to vote that will be in the details for this episode. So please go vote. I put out a tweet. If you see that and reply with evidence of you voting, I am going to pick two people to give a free, it's right here, Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny hat. It's a limited edition item. Pretty sweet. And as always, you guys can listen to this on wherever you get your pods, but you can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. You can watch this episode on ESPN2. Brett, you'll be on ESPN on Thursday. And yeah, thanks again to the fine producers at Omaha, Kirsten Sebecki, Owen Saylor, Jack Foster, Anthony Jimenez. Thanks for your help. I'll be back later this week.